Hey there, listeners. Check out Heritage Radio Network and join a community dedicated to meaningful, transformative food storytelling. Our Trova podcast, dedicated to all things food, combined with our impactful education programs, entertain, educate, and inform. Dive into the world of HRN, discover your next favorite food podcast, and learn more about our Storyteller Academy at heritageradionetwork.org.
This week on the line, we're talking to Chef Chris Santos. You may know him from Stanton Social and Beauty in Essex, where he changed the landscape of how we eat and dine and how we have a good time.
Everybody knows Chris from his time on the Food Network, judging people and chopping them up.
He's now doing so many cool things. He has a record label. He's boxing. He's commentating boxing.
Chris Santos has got his own heavy metal label, and he's here to talk about his time as a pugilist as he chops it up in the ring. With the gloves on, he's taking the gloves off. Welcome, Chris Santos, on the line. Welcome, Chris Santos.
Hiya.
What's happening?
Welcome.
Is that your real name, Santos? Was that Santos? That's a great name. It sounds like a stage name.
It's my stage name. No, yes, yes.
That's a cool name, Chris
it's
Santos.
It's his porn name.
It's actually literally, I think nobody calls me Chris. Nobody.
Really? Christopher?
No.
No, Santos.
It's either Chef or it's Santos.
Okay, fair enough.
My wife calls me Santos. Everyone calls me Santos.
Were you Christopher or were you Chris?
Christopher.
You were Christopher. Did you get in trouble and people were like, Christopher?
My mom occasionally, I guess.
But not
back
anymore.
In the day, no.
She doesn't know. All right. Well, Santos.
Yeah, Santos.
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 Is an East Coaster. Started working in the kitchen at 13 years old in Rhode Island. Rhode
40 Island. Years ago.
Is Rhode Island the littlest state?
It's the littlest state, and it's... Yes, it's tiny.
Chris got a, can I call you Chris or not really?
You can. I might not respond to
it. Is it awkward? No.
It's
Chef. Chef got his 40
He responds to Chef.
You can call me Chef unless you know me, in which case you can call me Mr. Santos. Got a 4-year degree from Johnson & Wales Culinary School, which at the time was the number one restaurant, and it still probably is the best hotel hospitality management program in the country. The Culinary Institute of America is kind of like they're neck and neck, but... At the time, this was 91 or something?
89 and 93.
Does the math work on that? I'm like, it took them 7 years to get through that. So this was a prestigious school. So you knew and you put in the time, energy, and were like disciplined to go to this, you know, the top school.
Well, I didn't want to go.
Oh, is that true? It was like army school? You had to go?
Yeah, so...
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
So I love music. I'm a big hard rock and heavy metal guy, and I was about 13 when I was like, okay, I need a drum set right away because all the kids in bands have like cute girlfriends and everything else.
Yes.
And long story short, I cooked through high school and I played in bands. And when I was getting ready to graduate high school, my mother said, "Why don't you go to Johnson & Wales?" And I said, "No, I don't want to do this. I want to really try to make it with the band." And she's like, "You're 17, it's a 2-year program. Like, you'll be out at 19 and you'll have something to fall back on." So I did it, but then they got me because I did very well. So they offered me a scholarship to come back for the hospitality management, the additional 2 years. So it was a free ride.
So it's your mom's fault because you've now come full circle and finally realized your dream of being a musician, music producer. But if it wasn't for her, you could have done this 40 years ago? Wait,
correct.
I'm sorry, I gotta do the rest of this.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
But his first real job out of school was working for the Time Cafe in New York City, which is a big job.
Yep.
And it was weird because most people you get out of school and you kind of like are a cook, but somehow you were
Chris
the
Chris has always been the boss.
The boss. He was the chef of the Time Cafe. And it wasn't like, that was a big job. It was a big, busy restaurant. And not only that.
I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah, but you didn't fail at it because you opened multiple restaurants with those guys.
Yeah,
you did well.
Yeah, 1994, I took the executive chef. I was a sous chef there for like, Six
10
months.
Minutes.
Yeah. And then they offered me the chef left. They offered me the job, and I was like, sure. And then I had no idea.
So this
what I was
is
doing.
Either the boss was like not terribly smart, or you were just extraordinarily good. It turns out that one of the whatever maybe, it worked out really
wherever
well
they
for
meet.
You. And Jesus, I was supposed to be reading this. I completely lost my sight here. You opened a couple of restaurants in the 2000s, and then opened Stanton Social 2005.
Yes.
So Stanton Social. It was a hit right away.
Overnight.
Overnight success. But it was one of,
prior to that, everything was a failure.
That's not true.
That I tried to do on my own.
Okay, fair enough. We should talk about that and understand that, because I think a lot of people like give up, and then you're like, dude, perseverance is the only thing that separates the successful and the failures.
Well, then I have a story for you guys.
So Stan Sochel was one of the first modern restaurants where like the whole package of the dining experience was equally weighted. And what I mean by that was, and this is like a big deal and something I'm super interested in, your personality, because you are obviously the food that Chris puts out is the chef. Chris Santos puts out.
Just say it all. Say all the names.
Somehow, and I don't know you, so I can't, from the outside, it seems like you put your ego aside and you're like, hey, the food, I'm a chef, so the food is the thing that I care so much about, but somehow I put my ego aside and the whole experience becomes the most important part. And so when you go and eat, or when you went and ate at Stan Sochel, it was like, yo, I'm going to have this great time and this great experience and it can be fun. And then you're surprised because the food is so good. Mm. And you're like, it's a little weird because most of the places where the food is that good, the food is the center of attention. But that isn't the case. And that was...
Right. And most of the places that are that fun, the food is no good.
The food is no good. So that was like... And then you opened up Beauty in Essex, which was just so cool. I mean,
cool.
I've heard stories about celebrities having sex scandals in the restaurant where you're like, how could you? No one ever. My bathrooms were very small. New York is very expensive real estate. No one could fit two
That's
people
all.
In there.
You should have made bigger bathrooms.
Not to interrupt you, Scott Conant coined it. He when he came to Beauty in Essex, he came on a Saturday night. It was 1,100 cover night, and he was drinking at the time.
Yeah.
So he was a little loose. Yeah. And he said it was great. It was great. He said, in fact, your food's way better than it has to be.
Right, exactly.
He's like, look around.
Exactly. You know,
the food's right. There was a horsehair wall.
There is.
There's a horsehair wall. I was like, I thought you rode, I don't even know how you get horsehair.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Exotic places.
It was beautiful, and the anyway.
Oh, I should also tell you about why we have a pawn shop in the front too. That's also a funny story, but
no. Well, continue. You know what? Why don't I give up on this whole thing? It was basically that the man is a talented chef. He's a television star, obviously. You know, polygot, is that the name of it?
Yes,
polygot. Such a great word. I wish. Anyway,
I prefer Renaissance man, but
dilettante is what I use to describe myself.
Sure.
So welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here, Chris.
It's great. I'm so excited.
So happy to have you.
What were you going to do this morning?
What?
If he wasn't here, what were you going to do? Were you going to like sleep in? Were you going to go to work? And
No.
He's got a thousand walk the things dogs? To do.
Yeah, I mean,
he just got off a private jet.
No.
Jet boat.
Yes.
To the helicopter.
I'm actually, I'm doing these festivals with Danny Wimmer. Danny Wimmer Presents, as
yes.
Amanda knows, because she does one every year with us. And I'm doing several of them this year, and it's a huge, huge job this year for me. So I've been really working, and then we're 2 weeks out from the first show. So I actually, every day this week and next week, I'm spending a lot of time. It's all remote, but I got, chefs that I'm
organizing.
Working with.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm doing this, I can jump right into it. I'm doing this amazing collaboration with the band Metallica, which is exciting.
I saw that. That's got to be like a gig.
Yeah.
I mean.
I got to show you guys some pictures later. So they have a whiskey called Blackened. And every year Blackened whiskey has, Bourbon and Beyond too, they have their own like activation.
Yeah.
And, but I'm also friends with the guys at Metallica and we started talking.
When did that happen?
Over the years.
From the restaurants they came in and you were like, yo, I got to go talk to these guys?
If you were the type of person that happened to like heavy metal, like you'd be really like, my friends are like A-list heavy metal stars. They're not, that doesn't mean anything to most people, but like Kerry King from Slayer, or, Rob from Metallica, da 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 da. So they're just cool guys.
Because you were
guys.
Like at the con. I don't understand that.
Dan just wants to know how to be as cool as you.
I don't understand. It's not fair to be like, yo, you just become friends with the lead singers of like the hottest band that ever happened to
walk
the
earth.
You feed them.
Because they're on the road and they don't have, so over the years, it started very grassroots, like 20 years ago when a lot of these bands weren't as big as they are today. And they're on a bus or whatever, and there was a word of like a game of telephone that if you were in New York or Vegas or LA and whatever, and you had a day off, go see this guy Chris Santos. He's amazing. He'll take great care of you. He loves metal. He's a fan. You know, great food, whatever. And so I just took really great care of, and then they would tell their friends and so on and so on. As the old commercial
they
used to say.
They told two friends.
Yeah, they told two friends. Exactly.
Wasn't that herbal essence?
And then in 2000, well, for several years, I was a brand ambassador for a liquor brand. And in 2013, they actually gave me my own tour bus. And I went on tour for a month on a metal festival, a traveling metal festival. So I met a lot of people there. And I started doing, I was barbecuing for the bands and whatever.
And this is while you're the chef of these restaurants, or is this, what's the
correct
era?
Yeah.
So you've got your restaurants. Is this just, I've only got my, because you know, I didn't get through the whole thing. You got restaurants in like five continents and nine countries. And
yeah. We are a very huge company. There's 10,000 of us.
But when you went on the road, when was this?
That was 2013.
Got it.
The first time. Anyway, that's where I met Danny Wimmer, who owns Danny Wimmer Presents, which is the premier rock and roll music festival company in the United States, North America, actually. Sorry. And Metallica, we're doing this thing where we're just burgers. But I created three Metallica-inspired burgers, and people are great. We designed this really cool box, which looks very reminiscent of we're calling it an unhappy meal. Actually, we're calling it the black box. So people are going to come to the festival, and they're going to be able to come up and get a what's called the black box. It's going to be, you know, their choice of any of these custom burgers, fries, and a black and whiskey cocktail if they're 21 plus, or a soft drink if they're not. And then they've got also limited edition, four limited edition guitar picks. One of which has the Metallica logo on one side and my logo on the other, which is just, if you told me
that's
no
cool.
Way.
Yeah, I'll show you a picture later.
Dude.
If you told me at 14,
you still play the drums?
I play the drums. Yeah, I actually just started a band, which is we're going to be here all day, guys.
I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
But wait, have you ever gotten on stage with any of these guys and gotten to play with them?
No. I've been asked, but I'm not.
You're not quite there yet.
I stopped for a long time. I didn't play for a really long time, so I just kind of got back into it in the last year or so.
But getting to jam with those, that would be.
Yeah, for sure. No, for sure. I'm going to a wedding May 4th. It's this rock star. Her name is Nita Strauss. She's recognized as the best female guitar player, hard rock and heavy metal guitar player in the world. She's also Alice Cooper's guitar player.
Wow.
And I don't exactly know the guest list yet, and her she's marrying her drummer, who's this awesome drummer,
no way,
rock star guy.
That doesn't sound like it ends well.
Don't know who's coming, but I got a text from them, which I think yesterday, saying that, you know, we're doing open jam, so if you want to get on stage. And so I don't know who else is going to be there, but I think it's going to be pretty awesome.
Start practicing.
Practicing. I have been.
I play the flute.
Oh, nice.
To keep everybody on track, let's maybe go chronologically. We were just talking about Johnson and Wales.
We'll go chronologically, but let me finish the Metallica thing.
Yeah.
So they're getting the burgers, the fries, and the cocktails, right?
Yes.
We're doing it at four festivals. It's 4 days each. And I'm also doing a pop-up for 3 days in downtown Louisville. And yesterday I signed a commitment letter for 80,000 5-ounce Wagyu burger patties, which also means 80,000 orders of fries.
Holy shit.
Yes, and it's just gonna be
in Louisville.
No, so we're gonna sell. We're probably gonna do 20,000 per festival. Probably 5,000 a day. It's gonna be It's gonna be a really crazy activation.
All these festivals are taking place in Louisville, though.
No. Daytona. Well, I'm doing a bunch of them, but the Metallica thing is at Daytona, Louder Than Life in Louisville, Bourbon and Beyond in Louisville, Downtown Louisville pop up. And then Sacramento.
But can you back up for just a tiny bit? I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I do like the chronological.
I'm sorry.
Thing might keep us.
But just back up a tiny bit. How does a person? I know. I understand that you have worked for all these years. So you know, if you're in this position where you have these connections, but how do you even find your way into a position where you're I'm gonna be in? How does a person get that job? Is it in conjunction with a festival? How do you even put that together?
I don't know. I have so many random interests that some are food and chef related, some aren't, and I just like to dabble and do as much as I can. And as I've gotten older and a little more mature, I was kind of a hell on wheels some years back. But you know, I am 53. I'm starting to think about mortality, and you know, I don't know what's in the cards for me. You know, my dad was 60. 64 or 66 when he died. So, I mean, that doesn't mean that's going to be me, but it could be. Right. And so I don't feel like I've got a lot of time left.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You do.
And then it's interesting because the new Metallica record is very good, by the way, but it's called 72 Seasons. And the inspiration behind the title is that, you know, it typically takes a human being 18 years or 72 seasons to kind of mature and become an adult. And that makes me think about, like, well, how many seasons do I have left?
Right.
And so I want to just do it all. I do boxing commentary. I started a band. I have a record label. I'm trying to do a line of sauces and cocktails just like you.
Yes.
More rock and roll. I won't directly compete with you. Don't worry. and other things I'm sure that'll come up. It's now or never.
I've been thinking about it in like these 5-year blocks because it takes really like 5 years to get anything
done
into a place where you're like, it got somewhere. And I'm like, all right, well, how many more 5-year blocks do I have? Like,
I think you do get to a point in your life and career where you think, okay, what do I want to do now? Like, right. I think there's a long time, I think especially in Chef's career, where you do what you have to do to get to where you have to get. And then you start to do what you want to do when you become successful. Because I think it's really cool, and talking to somebody like you is how you can then come full circle wanting to play drums when you were a kid and then coming back around. And now your chef journey took you to here where you right now. Like, and whoever thought that would take you here, you know? And I think it's so interesting for anybody who's interested in culinary arts, but they have another passion that you don't have to put one aside for the other.
Right, yeah.
Like, there's so much connection between artists, especially food and music. You know how I feel about that. Mm-hmm. I just think there's such an amazing connection between food, musicians, chefs, we have so much in common. And there's a language that we speak to each other that we understand, you know? And when you're talking about how you found Metallica or they found you or any of these artists, you know, there's so many musicians that work in restaurants that go to restaurants. And then I think on top of that, we had the great pleasure, and we still do it together, of doing that show Chopped.
Yep.
That little show called Chopped on the Food Network. Yeah. And, you know, when you travel and you crash in a hotel room and you turn on the TV, you know, a lot of times we're the ones that they're watching.
Yep.
You know, they're watching Chopped late night. And, you know, this is how we come to find, you know, I was talking before we started about the best wedding I've ever been to was Chris Santos' wedding. And getting to meet his friend, Paul Stanley, lead singer of Kiss. And having a conversation with Paul, who I at first didn't know who he was because he was obviously sans makeup and I don't hang around him as much as Chris does. So I was taken aback and he said that he was a fan of mine. And so when that stuff like that happens, you know, you get really zoomed out on life and you're like, whoa, perspective, you know, like when I was a 10-year-old kid, if I ever thought that Paul Stanley would have said that to me, I would have died. You know, I was just laid down and died. So you get to live your dreams and you meet your heroes, but then you're standing next to them and they're telling you how much they admire you.
Right.
Like that, I think that feeds us, you know, and it's like, wow, anything's possible.
Yep.
Now I know I can do this.
But we're also, as chefs, we spend so much of our time craving satisfaction. You want to hear that you did a good job.
Right.
You want to hear that people, you know, enjoyed the food and all the effort that goes into it was not lost. And it's just, and we're never good enough. We're always our own worst critics, right?
I think I'm doing great.
I only point to him because in every conversation we've had, he's saying that, you know, he's always trying to find that perfect slice of pizza, to be the best, you know. It's like we all have that. And so when you were talking about, you know, obviously, you know, I know you from New York and New York restaurants and the New York scene, and you know, I didn't see a lot of your failure before Stanton Social.
Tell you all about it.
Tell us about that.
I mean, just a little nugget of that, because I think also anybody who might be going through something that they consider a failure, because I think a lot of people would use that word, and it feels like a failure when it's happening, but to push through and get to the next thing is really difficult.
Yeah.
And you did it. And when you were in that, how did you get there?
So, in the briefest way possible. So 13, I started as a dishwasher so I could start saving some money for a drum set. And then the very first night that I worked, I've told the story before, the very first night I ever worked. So I'd never worked. I shoveled snow for $5.
I mean, you were 13. Yeah, worked. Yeah.
You started so, about 3 years earlier than most.
Yeah. So I think I want to say it was $2.35 an hour cash.
Yeah, but what you're not, you're paying rent, so right. that money goes straight to the pocket.
So the very first night that I ever worked, the chef quit in the middle of the shift. And this is not a story about me saving the day. Obviously, I fucked it up even further. Like, the woman who owned it, she, I don't even know if she was a trained cook or not. She had to come in and, like, try to save the day. It was a Saturday. It was busy.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember the guy screamed and yelled and ran out. And then, like, 5 minutes later, he came roaring back and grabbed the radio. This is mine. And went roaring back out again.
We all have a dream, by the way.
Don't forget the radio.
Of throwing down our apron and storming out. I've never done it, but one of these days, as an owner, it becomes a little awkward for you to do that.
Yeah, right. And so woman that owned the restaurant was trying to pick up the pieces, and it was not... That wasn't really happening. And she needed marinara sauce. So she told me to go downstairs. And I don't even think she knew my name at the time. I'm scrubbing pots and pans, like listening to Guns N' Roses or some shit. And I go downstairs to find this marinara sauce. She said it was in the freezer. I'm looking for a freezer. The only freezer I knew is at home. We had a stand-up fridge, and the top part was a freezer.
Right.
No, she had like a chest freezer. I didn't know. I didn't even, didn't dawn on me that was a freezer.
Right.
13. So I go back upstairs, empty-handed. No bueno. She tells me, kind of explains where it is, frantically. I go downstairs. The thing has got so much food in it that it's bungee-corded.
Oh, my
like
God. Closed.
Like yes. Luggage.
And that's my first experience with bungee cords, too.
Oh, my God.
So when I unhooked one, it flying around and hit me in the head.
No.
Then I grab this marinara sauce. It's like, I don't know, maybe a
half-gallon or a quart. Yeah.
Bring it upstairs. She tells me to put it in the microwave for X amount of minutes.
Oh, and God.
I go back to the
washing
the
dishes.
Thing. Finally, the microwave goes off. She's like, bring it to me now. I pulled it out. I picked it up. I took one step. It was like lava. I dropped it. And I can see it in my mind like it fell in slow motion. But it hit the floor perfectly, and then all the sauce came up and hit me.
Oh, no! My God. Oh, lava hot sauce.
Yeah, really bad. Really bad.
Shit.
So then I had to go to, you know, get treated or whatever.
Oh, you went to the doctor. That was
On top of it all, this woman's chef walked out, and now she's taking the dishwasher to the hospital.
This is a great learning experience. Like, how long does it take for a gallon of frozen marinara to burn you? I'm not a microwave, you know.
Anybody
expert.
Who's ever microwaved anything knows how lava hot it can get.
So I went back to work a couple of weeks later, and she had hired a new chef. And this guy was an Irish guy named Enda Mullen. I acknowledged him in my cookbook. I don't know where he is. I can't find him. I've done a web search.
Enda. The very...
Did he have an accent or was he...
Oh, yeah.
He
was like
I love it.
Very common
Irish
name,
he was probably
name,
about
actually.
20... He's probably... I'm guessing he was about 27 at the time, like 14 years older than me. So I don't even know if he's alive or what. But he just took me under his wing immediately. And he was this really good-looking, charismatic guy with this accent, which was totally foreign in this tiny town in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, hanging out with the cutest... server and he would sneak me beers by the trash bin and
this
is before the term like rock and roll chef, but if there ever was a rock and roll chef, it was this guy.
Yeah.
And so I was that's when I fell in love with the idea of like being a chef one day. And then so he brought me along, whatever. I worked a bunch of jobs, went to culinary school, moved to New York, Time Cafe, blah blah blah. But I just put it in my mind that I challenged myself at a young age when I moved to New York that I had to open my first restaurant before I was 30, which is if whoever's out there is listening to this, just don't listen to anything else, listen to this. Don't do that.
Don't do that, people.
Do not do that.
Do not do it.
I didn't know what I was doing. You think you know what you're doing, but I didn't know what I was doing. So I opened up a 27-seat restaurant.
I'm sorry, I got to interject. If you don't open it by the time you're 30 and you figure out what you're doing, then you'll know you shouldn't open a restaurant. So definitely open it early before you know too much.
Wait, what was this restaurant called?
It's called Wayanoka.
And, I remember Wayanoka. Yeah. Yes.
It was on Mott and Broom.
In New York City.
Yeah, I opened it in 98 at the age of 27. And it was 27 seats. And
great.
So a banner night for us would be like 85 covers. But it was just me.
That's plenty.
It was just me, another... a sous chef, essentially.
Why Wayanoka? What was the...
And still there today, on the face of... So, okay. Little Italy in New York was originally settled by a lot of Irish settlers first. And then the Italians kind of came in and pushed them out.
They moved up to Hell's Kitchen.
Okay, sure. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So what happened back in like the 20, whatever, the 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever it was, is the Irish settlers would open up social clubs, and they would name them ceremoniously after Indian tribes because of Indians' contributions in the Great Potato Famine. So
what was the Indian the Indian contribution of the Great Potato Famine?
They sent...
Really?
Yes. I don't know the complete history about it. Don't quiz me. But what I can tell you is that on the wall of this building, still to this day, there is
a plaque.
A painting. It's a painting of a tribal chief from the Wai'anoka tribe.
Wow. This is Mott and Broom.
I have to walk by it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Downstairs was a...
I bought firecrackers there.
That makes sense.
So Wai'anoka was open for a year?
Well, I'm going to get to that. This is the failure story. So it was 27 seats. I didn't know what I was doing. Like I said, it was me, Timmy, and then I had a dishwasher who didn't speak English, who then eventually became the executive chef at Stanton Social like 15 years later.
Wow.
But I got great. It put me on the map in a culinary way. Sam Sifton gave me a review. It was the 25 and under review, but it read like a 3-star review. It's the best review I've ever gotten, quite frankly. Time Out Magazine, great review. This was before cell phones and social media and Yelp.
Yeah, we were reading each other's reviews all the time.
So all those publications in the day, everything was great. But I couldn't make money because I didn't know what I was doing. And so sometimes I couldn't pay myself. Sometimes I couldn't pay my guys like 100% of what they were owed on that Friday. I'd have to get it to them, you know.
Where were you living at this time? You were living in an apartment?
I was in Brooklyn, Windsor
Terrace. And were you like going out drinking after work?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
In downtown, down in
Lower East Side all the time.
Lower East Side.
It's still breakfast. This is still.
The LES was your, that was
That was
your...
like, that was the days of like Motor City Bar and just, it was a different animal than it is now.
So you're getting off work at Wai'anoka. What time was it open till 11 p.m.?
We were open 6 days a week from 5 to midnight.
Not that this is important. I'm just trying to imagine this guy, who you are, 27 years old.
Yep.
Getting off of work, you're going out getting drinks, you're going back to Brooklyn. You brought bike across the Williamsburg Bridge, or you took the J train?
This is a great time in New York City restaurant scene, also.
There were shootings at the LAS back then, by the way. So you were like...
Yeah, for sure. You wouldn't go past Avenue C.
No, Alphabet City was scary.
Yeah. So this goes on for a while. And somehow I'm able to keep my head above water, but I'm not making any money, whatever. So I don't come from any kind of money. So when I built the place, I didn't have any money. So it was built on a shoestring. And so the exhaust system, you don't know this story?
I don't know the story.
The exhaust system that I installed was terrible. It wasn't strong enough.
Yeah.
So to this day, the hottest kitchen I ever worked in, I would take a tray of salmon out, put it on a shelf at like 4 p.m, and it was like sous vide. And at 7 o'clock, I just put a sear on it and played it. It's so ridiculous.
You created sous vide.
I swear it's a true story.
You heard it here first.
I swear it's a true story. But it was an old tenement building, and people who were living in rent control apartments, they'd been there forever, and now all of a sudden their apartment smells like fry oil.
Slowly cooking salmon.
Dehydrated salmon.
So they're pissed. And they were some crazy neighbors. We had a guy, because we had a nightclub downstairs called Double Happiness. And
I remember that.
And we had a guy. We'd have a line outside at like 2 a.m. to get in. This guy upstairs was so crazy. He would throw unopened cans of like Campbell's soup down at the line.
Oof.
I love that.
Fucking wild. That's brutal. That's so New York.
So my neighbors are pissed, and I get it, but I don't have any money to fix it. I go into work one day, and we've been open like 2.5 years or something, and I go into work one day, and I flip the switch on for the exhaust, and nothing happens. I'm like, fuck, I check the breakers, this and that. I don't know what's going on. Go upstairs, 6-story walk up to the roof. Somebody disattached the stack from the side of the building.
I just got to say, you know, in a world where if anything goes wrong now, you call the cops and... If you're in LA, they just don't pick up. You just call 911, it just rings.
Well, it's funny enough, me and my sous chef is this guy, Timmy, who's Mohawk. He went chops once too. We slept on the roof with baseball bats because I wanted to find this guy.
There was a time where like vigilante justice was the only way. Yeah. You know, your neighbor was messing around, you just cut the cables on his hood vent, and then you got to protect yourself. On the Line podcast is brought to you by Danny Boy's Famous Original Pizza from downtown Los Angeles. And Westwood, Los Angeles, Danny Boy's Pizza started with a singular goal of producing the best slice of pizza that we could possibly create. We make New York style pizza with the finest ingredients, built by a team of fun-loving, like-minded, culinary-driven individuals producing slices of pizza that are not going to empty your wallet, but they will fill your belly. Come down to Danny Boy's and say hi. I am on the line, cooking them up for you, as well as on the line with Amanda Freitag here in the studio for you. So I didn't
know.
So
that was completely gone.
Gone. So I had to close the restaurant. It was August. And I had to.
You know how lucky you are that no one ever came up on the roof when you were there with the baseball bat? Like, think about those moments of trajectory in your life. I threw a guy off the roof and now I'm in jail.
Yeah.
Right.
With 40 ounce beers.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do. It's going to cost me, I think it was $8,000 or $10,000 to fix it. And I don't have anybody. So I started borrowing like $50 from this person and $100 from that person, like the original Kickstarter, but just like, help me. So I got the money eventually and I replaced the exhaust and it was beautiful, shiny, new, strong. And got ready to reopen, called in some favors. Time Out actually did a blurb and so did Florence Abercrombie.
Did a blurb
saying that.
Who's still doing it, right?
Yeah, she's still doing it.
She's still doing it. The exclusive.
Off the menu, yeah. Florence Fabricant.
187 years old.
Yeah.
Thank you, Florence.
So I get all the food in. We go in, we build the menu from scratch, like we're opening for like it's opening day all over again, and we're set to open on Tuesday, and I was with Colleen at the time, and it was Tuesday morning at like 9 a.m. I knew it was gonna have a long brutal day ahead of me. It's getting ready for work, and somebody called me and said turn on the TV. That Tuesday that we were gonna reopen was 9/11. Yeah.
Not know that.
So we didn't reopen.
Interesting.
We didn't reopen, obviously.
And those $50 loans never got repaid. That's why he moved to LA.
I didn't realize that was 9/11.
Yeah.
Shit.
So that was terrible. So, and then one interesting thing though is I did spend the next 2 days cooking at Ground Zero.
Yeah.
They just threw a bunch of us on the boat and, you know, somebody would drop off random produce and we'd make soup or stofers.
Was your name at this point in your life? So now you're like, it's 2001, September 11, 2001. Is your name out there? Like now we think of you, Chris Sanders, you're like a famous chef guy and you've got all this, or at the time was it like, oh, you had some respect from these restaurants, but no one really knew who you were. Or?
Somewhere in between, I would say. Like the restaurant was always busy.
Had you done any TV stuff at all?
I'd done the Today Show and I guess
whatever you had to do to promote the restaurant.
Yeah,
you know stuff like that.
Yeah. Nothing like crazy. Nothing. I didn't really start really doing television until like Chopped 2008 or something. But anyway, so.
So how long after did Stanton happen?
2005.
So 4 years later.
So yeah. So what happened was, let me just tie a knot.
Yeah.
So, so now I don't know what I want to do, right? And I remember calling my mom again. I remember calling my mother and saying, like, you know what? I'm 30 years old. I'm in debt. I had nothing to show for all my time here. I'm coming back to Rhode Island, and I don't even know if I want to be in this industry anymore. And my mother was like, you're not. She's like, you can come for a visit and chill out for a week or two. I'm sure you're traumatized, but New York needs you now more than ever. Like, you have to double down, which is really cool.
As a restaurant guy, I had this conversation with my mom like 3 years ago. This is a regular occurring conversation where I'm like, Mom, I don't think I want to continue doing this. Like, I got nothing to show for it. I'm working my ass off here. I'm supposedly successful, but like, I told her I want to be an airline pilot. I was like, I'm thinking of becoming a pilot. She was like, I'm going to be a flying bus driver. Like, go back to work.
Go back to work. Get your head out of your ass and go back to work.
So then, you know, so.
But this was a real moment in New York. I think that everybody.
But then, so I used to buy my, God rest his soul, he passed away recently, but I used to buy my fish from this guy whose name we won't mention. I used to buy it right on Mott Street, like two blocks south of me.
And because he was like a illicit fish, or because you have some respect for him, or because he was like
still
off the back of the boat?
Let's say that. Him and his friends could have been an inspiration for The Sopranos.
Got it. I won't mention his name, but I used to buy fish from him and other things.
Yeah. So about 2 weeks after, maybe, I don't know, two weeks, this actually happened. 2 or 3 weeks after 9/11, I'm living in Brooklyn. The doorbell rings. I go downstairs, and it's him with these two, like, steroid, like, monsters. And he's like, look, you're a nice kid, and I know it's not your fault, but you got 30 days, or we're coming back. Like, that actually happened.
You owed him dough.
Yeah, I owed him quite a bit of dough, actually. Well, for me at the time.
Yeah.
You owe him like $2,600 with a Branzino or something.
No, I think I owe him closer to like 10.
Oh, 10K, wow. That's enough.
And then like within 48 hours, I got served by a food company that I also owed like $6,000. Oh, I was like, what the like?
Well, all the vendors were broke. They were broke because, you know, it had been to September 11th. Everything got
shut off.
But everything was, exactly. So,
and back then, everybody gave, now they don't even give you 30 days. But back then, you were like on a 30-day arm. So you could run up a tab.
So I don't know if you know, do you know Jan Suba? I mean, Bocadilla?
Yeah, of course. The owner, yes, Jan? Of course.
So after that, I didn't know what to do. So a friend of mine got me a job at Pier 60 doing catering or whatever. I mean, I hated it, but I needed to do something for a paycheck. And then I got this call from this guy, Jan, who said, I'm a huge, you don't know me, but I'm a huge fan of your restaurant. I just found out that it closed. I'm so sorry. I'm not really happy with my chef. You want to come work for me? So I was like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
And I was the chef at Suba on the Lower East Side, which is a beautiful restaurant.
Suba was such a beautiful restaurant. And it had, even though the title of it, the name of the restaurant dictated how it felt, it was this sort of underground,
it had a moat.
Cool vibe. Yeah. There was water there. It was just such a cool scene.
And was your food at these restaurants, I mean, was it like fancy food? Were you aspiring to wear like a white toque, or what was the?
It was different than what I do now. It wasn't kind of what I've been doing for like the successful portion of my career, is like just really approachable, whimsical, fun food that can easily be shared.
Shall I say it?
I
hope anybody who's listening just and also tunes in on YouTube to see Chris flip me the bird. We Unchopped used to, with all envy, of course, say that Chris puts food on a stick better than no one.
Yeah, chicken on a stick. He's the best. You're the best at it.
But the most successful out of all of us, Chris Santos, who's already retired, and we're all still working our asses off.
No, man, I would be scared. The watch you're wearing, whatever.
Anyway,
like I came in, he blinded me.
Oh, thanks. That's a nice one.
With saying that, you actually, and Dan said this earlier, you started something in the culinary world that nobody had been doing and is now almost in every restaurant. The way of eating, small bites, beautiful plates, packed with flavor, sharing a vibe, a scene. Food matches the experience. And nobody was doing it at that time.
So it's funny. I love, thank you for that, but it's not actually accurate. I'd love to say that I was the first to do it, but my inspiration was actually the restaurant First that Sam DeMarco had.
Oh, he was doing First.
He
oh
was
my God.
Doing all
Sammy
small
DeMarco, and First. I
yeah.
love you.
Is that a bar now? I think there's like a bar there now.
Who knows what it is? But oh, I love that restaurant.
He was doing all small plates. And I thought it was brilliant.
That's
so
right.
I really have to tip my hat to him. He really inspired me. But
he's in Vegas.
I know. I almost hired him like 2 years ago.
Sammy, I love
talked,
you.
We talked for like 3 months, but we couldn't get it across the finish line. So I work at Suba, and it was a decent experience. But and Jan's a great guy, but you know he's from Spain, and I'm not. And he sent me to Spain a bunch of times, which is really great. But you know, I just couldn't get the food right according to him, and I didn't. The guests loved it.
Everybody loved it.
But you know, him and I were always kind of clashing a little bit. And then the other thing was, even though I didn't know how to make any money, and I basically shot myself in the foot every day with Wayanoka, once you work for yourself, going back to work for somebody else,
it's difficult.
Well, at least for me, it was really difficult.
No,
so my partner Rich Wolf, he was the guy who hired me at Time Cafe in 93 or 94, and he and I would stay in touch, and we would go out to First. And we would talk about, this is so great, this menu's so great. You know, like I remember talking about, like, you know, imagine if you went, you know, a chef works their whole career developing a repertoire of dishes or a style or whatever. Like, can you imagine going to like a Rolling Stones concert and they only play 5 songs? You know, like the idea of been given this catalog, and then you can, you know, at the time everyone was doing, you know, choose your own appetizer, choose your own entree, choose your own dessert. There's 30 things on the menu. I only get to pick three.
Yeah.
And we would talk about it all the time. And so
I'm pretty sure if you go to Rolling Stones, they only play 5 songs.
And so we kept in touch, and then he said, why don't we do a restaurant together? And my longtime tattoo artist, Michelle Miles from Daredevil Tattoo, lived on Ludlow. She knew the landlord of the Stanton Social Space and blah, 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 blah. And Stanton Social was an immediate hit. It was the first time that I cooked the things I like to eat. Yep. I was like, I'm going to cook what I like, and if it works, great. If it
and at this point, you're in the kitchen.
Work, yeah. That will always work.
You're like in the kitchen, chopping it up, setting it up, hiring, firing. You're the mm-hmm. you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Everything. It's your restaurant.
Correct. Great, great from the start. Like, just busy. Great. It was a great restaurant. It really was. I miss it. I just opened a different iteration of it in Las Vegas. It turned it into a steakhouse. But anyway, it was like a year and a half ago now. So Stanton Social was great. And then that was 2005. And then I finally, for the first time in my life, started to like have some money in the bank and accumulate a little bit of money. And then we decided to take this giant monolith of a building, which became Beauty in Essex.
It was an undertaking.
It was Cat's Furniture, which you'd walk in there and there was the furniture was stacked to the ceiling. You had to like walk sideways in between the aisles, and there wasn't a piece of furniture in there that you probably ever want to buy. No offense to the owner, because he's fantastic, but
is he still around?
Yeah, well, he was. I think he lives upstate now or something. But so we took the building, and of course, the first thing I had to do was
with the same team.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But we all put our money where our mouth was. So if if I didn't have any money for Stanton Social, so my partner Rich loaned it to me, and then I paid him back. Then I made some money, and then the first thing I had to do for Beauty in Essex was empty my bank account with a big fat check so that we could start construction and all that. And when I went in there the first time after all the furniture had been moved and it was gutted, and I just saw how massive it was, I completely freaked out. I was like,
I would have had a panic attack.
I was like, how am I going to fill this place, number one? And if I do fill this place, what's it going to do to Stanton Social, which is literally around the block? You know what I mean?
And tiny. In comparison.
That whole build out, I was like, this is never going to work. It's never going to work. Of course it did. Stanton Social just got busier as a result. But the funny thing is, if you know Beauty in Essex, you enter through a pawn shop.
Yes.
Now, the reason we have a pawn shop is because we kind of wanted to do the speakeasy thing because that was very trendy at the moment.
Was very cool back then.
Yeah, Milk and Honey.
It was also for functionality.
Was that before that Mexican PDT. Restaurant downstairs that was like the coolest thing in the entire world? You went through the kitchen.
Oh,
I think they were right.
At La Esquina?
Yeah.
La Esquina.
Was that after you? Was that after Beauty in Essex? I wonder.
Around the same.
They were contemporary. I just remember going there and being like, oh, this is so damn cool. I wish I did that.
Yeah.
And they also got to put a restaurant in the basement for like no rent. We're like, oh, these geniuses.
So if anybody's ever been or not been to Beauty in Essex, when you walk in, it doesn't even look like a restaurant or a bar or anything. You're just walking into a pawn shop.
Right. A small one.
But just a real pawn shop, by the way, because I'm pretty sure I've browsed for things there.
Have you sold stuff there?
They will not buy stolen CDs, I'll tell you that much.
So we knew, so Essex Street was still kind of grungy.
Yes.
And so we knew we were going to like build this beautiful restaurant. We knew we wanted to create something that it wasn't just about being a speakeasy. We wanted to create something that was transformative where you really, you know, it was a journey and you open that because the pawn shop's kind of grungy looking on purpose. Not grungy, but just kind of no frills.
Right.
And then you open that giant door and the first thing you see is this two-floor chandelier, whatever.
Gorgeous.
But we didn't know what we wanted to do in that space. We just knew we wanted to create something. So for a while, our working idea. So me and my two partners, we would get together a couple times a week at Rich's house, and I would go shopping, or I'd grab stuff, and I would cook all day, and then they would come home. They would come over to his house at like 9. We'd drink a bunch of wine, smoke a little weed, and then talk about the menu, talk about stuff, and you know, the next day we'd look at our notes, see if anything was actually good from there before. Yeah. So for a while, the working idea is we were going to do like a bodega. With like Beauty and Essex branded bottles of water and whatever and all these things. But it wasn't really like sexy. It wasn't, you know, we weren't sold on it. And one night we were at Rich's house and we had probably 3 bottles of wine in. And I said, we should do I have a bit of a, well, at the time it was even worse, I had a New England accent. So we should do a pawn shop. And
what does that sound like? What was the New England accent?
So,
oh, yeah. That's what he thought?
So everyone thinks it's a great idea. And then we get so excited. And then the next day we meet in the restaurant and they're talking about we should get guitars on the walls and we should, you know, what if we make it jewelry themed? And I'm thinking to myself, no, guys, I meant like, let's have like VHS tapes and like, and they're like, what are you talking about? They thought I said porn, P-O-R-N.
That's great.
Come on, say pawn shop.
I mean, that's what I said.
Give us your best New England accent. That's what I
said. Pawn.
Let me get a pawn shop.
But they thought, sorry, they thought I said P-A-W-N, which is not what I meant. But in hindsight, it was a much better idea.
So you actually did say that word.
I did. There's a bar, and actually there's a...
Double down.
There's a bar here called Adults Only. It's a really cool cocktail bar.
Yeah.
But their entrance is a speakeasy that is, it looks like you're walking into like a 1980s, like, porn shop. Nothing explicit, but it's insinuated.
There's an adult bookstore on that's closed down, and I drive past it all the time, and I think it's got a great sign, this iconic sign that says Adult Books, which I think is so weird because I'm like, aren't adult all books? Books, like
adult books.
Like, well, you're gonna read your fantasy. What's going on? It's like, are these picture books? But I'm like, oh man, it would be so fun to do something in there, like this adult bookstore.
Yeah.
So
there cool. is a whole genre of erotica novels.
I know, but I don't think men are really into reading about their exploits. You know.
Mm-hmm. No.
Anyway.
So once we got through that, once we decided it was going to be the other kind of porn. That's when we got the idea.
Pawn porn.
That's when we got the idea.
Really, it was going to be a chess store originally.
We really explored the idea of it being jewelry themed and being mostly jewelry based. And then we took our design and we ripped it up and threw it out. And now we started a new design. So if you're in Beauty in Essex in any location, every room has a jewelry theme. So there's like the pearl lounge, which is all the pearls hanging from the ceiling. There are these huge art pieces that were basically recreated from like my partner's grandmother's brooch from like the 1930s.
Wow.
We blew up into this 20 piece like thing. There's a locket room and so on and so,
beautiful.
Forth.
How is this like, yo, I get these designers together and we work with them. We give them our ideas, or how do you take this like image in your head and turn it into what?
Yeah.
You have designers on that.
Yeah. Yeah. We would scribble ideas. I would scribble ideas and then we take it to them so that they could actually tell us why
this
it's not
sounds
functional.
Fun. Yeah. It sounds like a fun collaboration.
This is the best part. My favorite part of it, my career has been the creativity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like even last year, I opened up Stanton Social Prime at Caesars, and it was just a great journey. Like I hadn't done it in a couple of years, and just
and you
like
got to design it.
Design it, and you know, just pick out you know everything, the steak knives, and the you know, we do like. We do, it's Vegas. We do the steak sauces are served in perfume bottles.
Oh, and that's
like, we have Chanterelle number 5.
You know what I mean? I love that.
And so just like the kind of stuff, like coming up with stuff like that.
So you have Beauty in Essex still in New York. You have Beauty in Essex in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You have a new Stanton Social
Prime,
which is more steakhouse theme.
Correct.
And this is all connected to the Tao Group.
Yes. And we had Beauty in Essex in Los Angeles for 7 years. It did recently close. We are looking for a new location. And
by the way, two of my guys that work for me worked for you at Beauty in Essex, Los Angeles.
Oh.
There, and they wanted to say hello. They were like, he won't know who we are, but we want him to know that we had a great time working for you.
In the kitchen? Or
yeah, in the kitchen. Ooh. Kitchen guys. Guy named Tony Marino. He's the chef. He's the boss.
What a great testament.
Yeah.
I've
a dear friend of mine who was my sous chef for a long time, Paul Lefebvre, worked with Chris. Does he still work with you guys?
Yes.
Still works with Chris.
You staffed my entire kitchen.
And
because Empire was closing, right? Is that you gave me like a whole battalion of cooks.
Oh yes, and then
was
when,
that Stanton
when
Social?
I,
or
no,
was
that Beauty in Essex? All your all Beauty my guys from the diner went to Vandal.
Oh right.
And then I think some of those guys trickled back over to Beauty in Essex. But I always felt good sending anybody to your kitchens.
What? I love Vandal. I miss it so much.
But wait, in the interest of time, so
that's
now
a nice thing to say.
We're
by
restaurant
the way. Sorry,
world.
You just said I always loved sending my and felt good about sending my guys to go work for you. That's
yep.
That means you're not a jerk off.
Always.
That's a glowing.
You know, one of the things I'm proudest of is the tenure of my staff. I have chefs that have been with me for 20 years, literally. Mm-hmm. And I mean, multiple chefs that have been with me 10 plus years. But just a little shameless plug. We are opening Beauty in Essex at Mohegan Sun Casino.
Oh, that's right.
In October.
Yes.
Yeah, so that'll excited
be,
about that.
I can't wait because we do a chef festival there every mm-hmm. year. And I look forward to eating delicious food when I'm at Mohegan Sun.
You understood.
Diplomatically, I will say that. But okay, but I want to get to the other stuff because I'm so excited about this journey. Mm. And I'm so excited about all the stuff you've always done. And I love your health and fitness journey, which leads to boxing and what you're doing with mm-hmm. boxing. But I also love the music side of what you do. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we've talked a little bit about the music stuff. But
and horror movie.
And you're actually even doing a horror movie.
What does it mean you're doing a horror movie?
Me and two of my best friends are like obsessed with horror, and we started a production company, and we're going to produce a horror movie.
And you have a script already?
Well, we have the concept, and we have, my wife's an actress, so we have tons of contacts in the industry, and we are, we're in the process right now of vetting some writers so that they can write, you know, a small sampling of a screenplay for our concept. I think we have, I can't talk about it, but I think we have an amazing concept.
Not only is Chris's wife an actress, Natalie, and she's the most beautiful woman, and she has the most beautiful voice I've ever heard.
She's an opera singer.
She's also an opera singer.
She was a halftime show at an NBA Finals game. Like, she's really good. She just went on tour, like, singing in Italy for a few weeks. That was an opera.
Her voice is just stunning. Anyway, so
she sang opera in Paul Stanley's house, and he was like, what?
On the Line podcast is brought to you by Freitag Cocktails. I'm so excited about these. Freitag, that's me. Friday in German, hello. Friday's a great day for a cocktail. We make them in a family-owned distillery in San Diego. Chef-crafted cocktails, our own bitters, our own vermouth. We make Manhattan, Negroni, Margarita. What else could you ask for? Go to freitagcocktails.com, order them today, and they'll be delivered to your door. Cheers!
Really
she
cool.
sang the night before the wedding at your party.
That's true.
That was fantastic.
She's incredible. She plays piano. She doesn't at the moment, but in her past, she's played, let me see if I can get this right. She's played drums in a Rolling Stones cover band, guitar in a Lynyrd Skynyrd cover band, keyboards in a Bon Jovi cover band, and one more, I forget.
Shout out to Natalie.
Yeah, she's incredible.
What's up, Natalie?
She's
love awesome. You. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about boxing because this is really going to lead into what you're really doing. So I said before the word retirement. You're never going to really retire from your chefdom.
No, I mean, I'm still, so you know, I'm really fortunate to be part of Tower Group Hospitality, which acquired my restaurants. I kind of folded them in and whatever. And it's an incredible company. And so I'm still a partner and I'm still a consultant and I'm still involved in like menu development, mm-hmm. but I don't go to work anymore. Like I don't do day-to-day operations. I'm starting to miss it. The first year was fantastic though.
Oh, yeah.
but boxing is, how much time do we have?
Why do you love boxing?
All right, so
how much time do we have left?
It's 3:10 now.
What does that mean?
Is Billy's coming now?
10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. So real quick about boxing is
this is more of a jab than an overhand.
of my passions, which would be music, horror movies, boxing, and food and cooking, by far my biggest passion is boxing. And I have a boxing magazine collection that goes back to the 19-teens. Like I'm talking, I don't even know, 6,000-7,000 magazines. Like,
wow.
I'm always scouring eBay and finding them. If I get another box and delivered, my wife's going to kill me. I have, you know, 15,000 fights on DVD. I have, you know, I have a home gym that is like an incredible, crazy, rare memorabilia. But it was my grandfather put me on his knee when I was a kid. And, you know, he was a fighter. And my mother's
pugilist.
Father was a fighter, too. Yes. And, I loved it as a spectator, but I didn't actually follow through. I wish I did. I swear to God, I could have been a contender. But I started in the gym when I was about 20, when I moved to New York. Yeah. I moved to New York and I started going to Times Square Gym in Times Square. Really grungy place. And I trained at Gleason's mostly in Brooklyn from like 93 to to the month that we opened Beauty in Essex. So about 16 years, I was in the gym, 5 days a week, 175 pounds.
You've got fast hands. You can move around.
That's actually the name of my LLC is Fast really? Hands. I swear to God.
I love that.
Yeah, wow, that's really funny. It got to the point where I was sparring with professional fighters and holding my own. And then, but I was getting cortisone shots in my rotator cuff. I had the same rib broken twice.
Oof.
And one of the times it happened was a month before I was opening Beauty and Essex.
And my
partners were pissed. That. They were like,
you gotta be on your feet.
So I said, you know what? I'm gonna take 6 months off, rest my body, and then I'll go back. I never went back. That was 2010.
Well, of course, you opened a juggernaut of a restaurant. Yeah. How do you go back?
When I finally went back about 18 months ago, I ballooned from 175 pounds to 240 pounds. Wow. And which is a lot of weight. It's 65 pounds, but divided by 12 years,
it just creeps up
5 pounds a
year.
Yeah,
but multiply that by a few jumps on the rope, yep. And your knees are not happy with you.
So my wife, for Christmas a few years ago, she really did it. She knows how much I love boxing, and there's a trainer. I know we're running out of time, but there's a trainer. His name is Freddie Roach. He's famous. He's most known for training this guy Manny Pacquiao, but he also trained Mike Tyson for a spell and Oscar De La Hoya and all these guys. And she, for Christmas, she's like, I don't know what to get this guy. So she went to the gym and was like, do you think like I could get like, could he come and get like a training session with Freddie Roach? And they're like, no, we don't really do that. But she had a really nice conversation with his wife, and they ended up actually calling her back. And we were like, you were so passionate about it. Like, and then they, I think they also realized they watched my TV, whatever. But they were like, yeah, we'll do it. And so I thought I was going in. I was so nervous the day of that fucking session too. I was out of shape. I hadn't done it in a while, but I went in and I've been there ever since. I go anywhere from 2 to 5 days a week, depending on what's happening in my life. I've lost significant amount of weight. I'm back in the gym, like.
But not only are you training alongside pros.
Oh yeah, so I do commentary.
But you're also a commentator. Yeah. I just want to make sure. Does Billy need to be greeted or escorted in? Does he know the code?
He's scheduled at 3:30.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I started.
Let's talk about you being commentator.
Yeah, I started. So I also have a lot of friends in the boxing business, and about a year and a half ago, I got approached by this very well-known promoter who used to be the president of HBO Sports. And he asked me if I wanted to get involved doing commentary. So I just did a show in Philadelphia last week. I've done a handful of shows now. They're not huge. They're not like pay-per-view.
They will be.
But they air in like 200 countries. They air on like UFC Fight Pass. They air on DAZN. They air on Amazon Prime. Like there's a lot of people. There's a lot of eyeballs. So I've actually gotten some phone calls from like much more prominent networks that are asking me if I want to get involved, which is crazy. It's
so
like a dream
come
true.
So not only does Chris have fast hands, but as you can see, he's a fast talker.
Well, I know we're running out of time, so.
No. But you've always been fast, and internally fast. You're always the drummer on the chopped judge's table, which Ted Allen will scold you
very fidgety most
of the time.
You're very fidgety guy.
But you are perfect for that. You think fast, you talk fast, you know the sport.
Yeah,
so does it feel doing it?
I love it. At first, and we actually tie in chopped because we talk about how I've been judging food, but tonight I'm going to be your unofficial judge, and I score the fights, and they ask me every couple of rounds how I have it scored and stuff like that.
How
I love
it. The scoring, you're good.
Great, yeah, very good.
Really,
yeah. I'm great.
you're paying attention.
I'm very knowledgeable about the sport of boxing. I know more about boxing than I know about cooking or anything else. It's like a soft addiction.
Wow.
At this point in my life.
And speaking of cooking, we have to touch upon this quickly because Chopped is such a through line for our lives, and mm-hmm. Chopped has opened a lot of doors for all of us.
Sure.
And, Chris and I have been judges on Chopped since 2008, and then 2008. Mm-hmm. Chris and I were both living in Brooklyn at the time.
She showed me the ropes. I didn't know what I was doing. The first episode, they didn't tell you what to do. So I just followed her. She was sitting next to me. So when she picked up the fork, I picked up the fork. When she put the fork down, I put the fork down.
I was like, it'll be okay, Chris. It'll be good. We had a blast. But everybody always looked at Chris as the tough judge,
Are you the tough guy?
Chris is the one who always gets the piece of hair, fingernail.
That is true.
He always gets the foreign object on his plate. I'm not kidding. It's a phenomena.
Yeah.
It is the weirdest thing. So it just really pigeonholed you into, this villain because you have all these things that you can't eat on your plate. It's wild. If anybody's an avid watcher, you'll know.
Someone putting fingernails on your plate in the back, like, this is great TV.
But also, Also, Chris was always scheduled, and I was too. And I don't know why I was, but for every Halloween episode.
Yes. Oh my God.
Every single Halloween episode. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Which would have the weirdest ingredients and the weirdest chefs. But go on, Dan.
This boxing thing? Is there ever a moment in your career, in your restaurant? Have you ever actually? Because I train, fight, but I never. Have you ever gotten in a fight ever? As an adult, you've gotten into a physical fist fight?
Yeah, actually.
Oh, really?
Like on the street?
Yeah, I have a scar here because I broke this knuckle and I ripped the skin off it in a fight once. That was
really
fun. Yeah.
As an adult human,
a young adult human.
Dan does jiu-jitsu.
No, I just think about this because you know. It's that idea of like, you know, actually physically fighting
somebody. I'm not a guy. I don't ever look for fights. I'm not that guy at all.
You're not like in the bar getting drunk.
Never. But you know, yeah, there's been times where you have no choice. I mean, it's been a long time, but
yeah. But I love like to know whether I should, whether I should mess with you or
I
not.
I do enjoy hitting people. Like I love it in the gym. Like I love it, you know? But you know, it's a controlled environment there.
And we have some fun stuff coming up. Obviously, you're doing Louder Than Life and some other festivals. But Bourbon together, we're doing Bourbon and Beyond. And it was a festival that I had done and I loved. And I think we talked about it. And then you got connected to Danny Wimmer. Mm-hmm. Danny Wimmer runs the festivals. Danny Wimmer presents. Thank you, Danny. We love you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do the culinary and the VIP, Danny's Backyard. But we also do cooking demonstrations on the culinary stage, and Chris hosts them all, and we have a blast because we do culinary demonstrations, but we also pair them with the artists. The musicians come on stage with us, and we cook, and we, you know, the audience loves it.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
your
fun.
Favorite musician with some of your favorite chefs, and we're in Louisville for 4 days. The music is incredible. Last year's lineup was sick. You know,
I'm there for 15 days.
Chris is happy about being there for 15 days in Louisville. Good luck getting a salad.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, the closer was Bruno Mars. Blondie played Duran Duran. Yeah. We got to meet Wayne Newton. Like, the lineup is sick. The Killers. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I was backstage for Brandi Carlile crying a year ago. You know, like, I love her. You know, I got to, originally, when I first started doing Bourbon and Beyond, you know, I got to see and meet Stevie Nicks, Dave Grohl, you know, be backstage for Foo Fighters. Like, it's just one of my favorite times of the year.
Yeah, it's great. It's
my
so much
favorite
fun.
Weekend of the year. Who knows what this year will bring? It's going to be a blast. So, Bourbon and Beyond, if you're in Louisville, September 20-something.
I think it's the 15th.
September 15th.
I can't get this wrong. Hold on.
I don't really like loud music, so.
You know what? It's outside. Okay. So it can be as loud as you want it to be. September 19th to the 22nd. We're also going to be running a really fun promotion in the Kroger's that sell my Freitag cocktails down there. If you go in and you buy some Freitag cocktails, you could win a free ticket to Bourbon and Beyond.
Oh, amazing.
Ooh, yes. Is it like a golden ticket thing?
Yes.
That's cool.
It's really cool.
I like that.
And
Willy
it's
Wonka.
Just because we're so excited about the festival.
Yeah. It's
and cool. All the elite bourbon families are there. The Pappy family's there. Everybody who makes bourbon is there. Yep. So if you're also a bourbon lover, that's where you want to be that weekend.
It's just a fantastic time.
It really is. It really is. So we get to cook, we get to eat, we get to sip on a little bourbon, we get to listen to music. It's it's so great. So I can't wait to see you there, but hopefully I'll see you before that. And I can't thank you enough for being here. There's so much more to talk about.
I'll come back next year. Or next season.
Come back. Yeah. Come back. Is there anything else you want to pick
Always.
Chris's
no,
brain
no,
about?
I'm thoroughly satisfied. I feel very grateful. I'm glad to know you now.
Oh, thanks, man.
Because I've met you, but I don't know you.
Wait,
before.
You didn't even talk about your history quickly. Your history of you guys being neighbors in New York City as young chefs.
Oh, yeah, down the block.
Where were you? Where were you cooking?
I was cooking at a restaurant on Stan Street between Orchard and Allen. And I remember.
What was it called?
It was called the Meatball Shop. We made meatballs. And I remember walking down the block, and there was always a line. Always a line standing outside of Stan Social. And there was always the cutest girl smoking cigarettes outside. And I was like, what is this guy doing over here? There's something cool going on over here.
Chris's motivation the whole time since he was 13 was getting the cute
getting
girls.
Getting the cutest girls. And what really, it's not even a joke. You know, in New York City, you look for the cutest girls. That's where the hot spot's at. And it was always outside your restaurant.
But truthfully, true story, I mentioned this earlier to Amanda, or maybe to you, I don't know. Like, if I was, you know, my reward system my whole life is I don't usually eat. I mean, obviously, you taste at the restaurants.
Right.
But I wouldn't ever like take a break and have dinner at the restaurant. I would taste throughout the day. But then my reward system is to go home at midnight, 1, 2, put on a movie or TV or something and order pizza. Or have taco. Yeah. Very unhealthy. That's how I ballooned 75 pounds, by the way. But on particularly tough shifts or annoying shifts, one thing I would look forward to get me through that last hour was like, I'm going to go to the meatball shop just and get some shit and bring it home. And that's going to be great. So let's focus on that. And not the shit show that all these tickets are.
I mean, there's a treat at the end of the rainbow there.
That feels very nice.
It's totally true.
Well, now that you're LA neighbors, you have to treat yourself to Danny Boy's Pizza.
Danny Boy's Pizza.
Downtown LA.
Great.
And then you're opening a new spot. Do you want to talk about it? Westwood.
I almost, just for preparation, I didn't. But I almost ordered on Postmates last night. The reason I didn't is because you're located like 9 miles from my house.
Just too far.
And I thought if the first time I tried, I should come to you.
Yeah, it's delivery pizza sucks. It's a little known secret. But anytime you put pizza in a box, it's not a great thing. Mm. It's way better at fresh out of the oven. But you should definitely buy a delivery.
Buy it any way you can.
I want to do like a delivery with oven in the truck so that it's like fresh out of the oven at your house.
Yeah. Do it.
Deliver. I want to do that. But, you know, I need somebody that has technological abilities and wants to drive a truck.
Okay. Somebody out there who's listening, if you're tech savvy and you can drive, Dan needs you.
If you're a tech billionaire, if you love pizza, if you want to lose a few $100,000, look me up.
Otherwise, if you're into boxing, food, music, or...
horror movies.
Are you biking
hot sauces?
Are you biker too?
No. I do have. Well, you guys are gonna laugh. I gotta get it together.
I hope it's a Honda Ruckus.
No, I bought a 1970 Chevelle.
It's, whoa!
Oh, it's gorgeous. Except, guess what, guys?
Well,
I don't have a license.
You don't have a license? You're such a New Yorker.
Because I never in a million years. I lived in New York City for 28 years or whatever. I never in a million years thought I was ever gonna leave New York. So you were
in for such a treat. The DMV out here is. sense of hospitality. There's a sign on the wall that says it is illegal to attack a government worker because the sense of hospitality there is so extreme that you feel like you want to attack the people.
I mean, I got to do the written test. I got to do a road test. I got to do all the things. So, and there's never a good time. Like,
of course not.
So, yeah.
You got to bear down.
So when we take the car out, my wife drives it. And we get a lot of weird looks.
She probably looks really good driving that car.
That's because you're sitting in the back seat.
Yeah. But anybody who doesn't know, if you grow up in New York, or you live in New York for a really long time, most New Yorkers don't have a driver's license.
I had a car and then gave it up and then my license expired and I was like, I'm never going to need this again.
Right.
Stupid.
No, you do. Never say never.
I know.
Never say never. Well, I can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you. It was fun.
Good to see you. Thanks. Always good to hear what's next because you are a chameleon, ever-changing, passionate about many, many things. And honestly, I think you inspire a lot of us.
Oh, thanks. That's very, very, very sweet.
Yeah, and very true. And I think Dan's a little bit inspired right now. I see him thinking.
No, I wanted to connect you with my friend who's a horror movie director.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I want to connect you too.
Sure. We have a really great idea. And so if we can actually pull this off, I think it'll be great.
This is a real guy. I want to connect you to him.
That would be
connections
he's deeply
made.
Passionate about it. You would like him. He's a New York guy. It would be a
love thing. It.
Connections are made here. Yeah. Where, Dan? Where are we?
Here on the line, connections are made. This is where dreams come true. This is where dreams come true.
Thank you, Chris. I'm going to cut it off right there.
Woo! Thank you, guys.
Season 2 of On the Line was recorded in Santa Monica, California at Operation Podcast. Thanks, Chase.
Our engineer and editor is Matthew Dunahoo. Our theme song is an original composition by John DeLucci. Thanks, Chef.
On the Line is produced by Cindy Augustine. Our co-producer and publicist is Jesse Gerstein.
Our social media and marketing guru is Kedzie Teller.
Thanks for listening
to On the Line.